Well, this has to be one of the poshest parties I've ever been to, which means I'll get thrown out if I'm seen with this microphone. So welcome, sotto voce, from under my jacket, to the Palm Court of the Plaza Hotel on New York's Fifth Avenue. Waiters are gliding round me with cocktails, vodka cocktails, and you'll understand why in a minute. And the guests, at least some, are attired in black and white, as requested on the invitation, because this is a party to celebrate a big event in the life of one of our oldest games. It's the World Chess Championship.
No, that's not him. That's not him. Super hottie.
Can you do it one more time up top?
I'm Tim Huell, here for assignment on the BBC World Service. And right now I'm in a bit of a crush with the paparazzi as they jostle to ambush the reigning champion, Magnus Carlsen of Norway, and his Russian challenger, Sergei Karjakin.
Well, Magnus Carlsen has finally appeared an hour late on the red carpet. Real Matt Damon lookalike. Real ultimate cool dude image that he's got, something completely new for chess. Magnus, can I ask a very obvious question? Are you really as relaxed as you always seem?
No, it's my less than relaxed answer.
So, what is it about Sergei Karjakin that poses the biggest danger? Is he an immovable object?
Hardly movable.
I'm sorry, we have got to keep moving down the line. I need there to be a line.
And here now, completely different, is Sergei Karjakin. Really looks much more gawky, almost like a teenager at his first date. Nice smile, but a complete opposite in terms of style to Carlsen. Slightly kind of awkward with a much more pinched face and a slightly prominent ears.
This time the Russian media get in first with the key question about Karjakin's pre-match breakfast. So will he be having strawberries and cottage cheese like Garry Kasparov used to? No, the answer from slightly dull Karjakin is a slightly dull fried egg. But no wonder they care. Russians held the world chess title for almost the whole of the second half of the 20th century, and they want it back. So at this party, there aren't just Russian journalists, Russian grandmasters, but also Russian businessmen and Russian diplomats. Chess matters. It has 600 million players, nearly every 12th person on the planet. And its governing body, FIDE, is the only major world sports organisation headed by a Russian. But extraordinarily, that Russian, Kirsan Ilyumzhinov, who should be centre stage tonight, is the one key VIP who's missing. He's banned from America for alleged financial links with Syria. Will US sanctions checkmate him? Or is Donald Trump, the pawn-turned-queen, who'll ride to his rescue? Kirsan Ilyumzhinov and I go back a long way. 20 years ago, already fascinated by him, I travelled to his homeland, a place so odd and remote, it's hard to believe it really exists.
This is the steppe, the vast, flat, empty grassland that stretches all the way from Central Europe to China.
It was Kalmykia, a barren corner of southern Russia, the only Buddhist part of Europe, where they herd sheep and sing, deep in their throats, of ancient heroes. But they had a new hero, Kirsan, a young multi-millionaire entrepreneur they'd just elected regional president. Many say he never kept his promise to make Kalmykia rich, but soon he was running a much bigger kingdom that he certainly poured money into, Chessland, which, if it had borders, would be the third most populous country on Earth. As its leader, he jets around the world, organising tournaments, shaking hands, so even managing to catch up with him just before the championship as he rushed round Moscow in his chauffeur-driven Merc was quite an achievement. Excellent, thank you.
Every people who work, he has during the year 24
days holiday, 24 days
sure.
holidays.
Yes. You never do?
I never use yeah. never use. I start at 8 o'clock in the morning and finish at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Wow. But you look quite healthy.
Yeah. Why? Because I play chess.
uh-huh. Kirsan's in his mid-50s now, but he still has the slightly boyish, otherworldly look that I remember from years ago. He's calculating, but oddly, perhaps calculatingly, innocent-seeming. Surely the only figure on the world stage who believes he was once abducted by aliens.
Right, in September 1997, yes, I met with aliens. It's very interesting.
What did they look like?
Like people. Yellow people.
Ordinary yellow people.
This special suit. They smiled and laughed, and they said that you not made a big evolution. You eat your brother's animals, yes, in restaurant and so on. You understand which I mean, yeah? For me, it's a simple point because I feel that I'm a man or child or baby of all space.
Journalistically, I feel I'm letting you down by failing to ask what language they spoke, whether they were male, female or neither, and a myriad other questions. But there's no time. We're reaching Kirsan's office, where he's going to treat me to coffee and show me the document at the heart of this story. So Kirsan's assistant just brought in a packet of documents, a yellow
this
envelope.
Is
this is directly addressed to you. So, wow. So this is
original.
This is the actual document that tells you that you're under sanctions.
Eight months from 25th November last year, when I was included in the sanctions list, I asked OFAC, Office of Foreign Asset Control, to send the papers. Why? And they sent, you see this?
And here it says, yeah, Kirsan Ilyamjinov has materially assisted and or has acted or purported to act for or on behalf of the government of Syria. Well, so I'm just going on through this thing now, and some bits of it are redacted, but it's true that it doesn't give any more details in here at all. So basically, there's a lot of big black squares here in these documents. Exhibits 730, 33, 34, redacted in full. But maybe this is evidence against you, but it's classified, it's secret information. What does that mean?
When I called by phone also, I sent email to the... they said to me, they answered that all which we have, we sent to you.
The only other skimpy details are on the US Treasury's website. They mention Kirsan's part ownership of a bank, the Russian Financial Alliance Bank, along with a partner, Mudar al-Houri, who'd already been sanctioned for Syrian business links, and Kirsan's alleged links with two officials at the Central Bank of Syria. I tried hard to persuade the Treasury to tell me more, but they wouldn't. So I tried to do a bit of digging online. And here, on the site of the Russian Central Bank, I found two official warnings to the bank that Kirsan has been involved with, the Russian Financial Alliance Bank, about suspected money laundering, one from 2014 and another from August of this year. So straight away I call Kirsan, but he says he no longer has any shares in the bank. In the documents on the site, and this is a list of shareholders as of the 30th of May this year, it does say, you know, very clearly that one of the shareholders is this company Conmex, which you own.
Yes, man. I invited a lawyer. I will ask Banko Perfa, what они спрашивают BBC.
A minute or two later, he comes back.
Lawyer said that in March officially I went out from the bank.
So just to be clear, you're saying that the bank's own documents are wrong?
Yes, wrong.
But these are two warnings, and, well, one of them is from this year, but the other one is from 2014.
I know about this warning, yes. I don't relate with this bank. I know about this warning from newspaper.
or you were at that time, even if you're not now, quite a big shareholder in that bank.
2 years ago, I asked to prepare documents and I withdraw from this bank.
2 years ago?
Well, 2 years or 1 year ago, I don't remember. But now I'm not interested of this bank.
Well, that's as far as I can get. Crucially, information about the transactions that triggered the money laundering warnings isn't publicly available. Kirsan says the bank had no business with Syria. He's never heard of one of the Syrian officials mentioned by the Treasury, and the other he just helped with a family problem. America, he says, has simply targeted him because he's a friend of President Bashar al-Assad and has very publicly visited him since the war began in Syria. Some people say Bashar al-Assad, you know, he is a criminal, he kills his own people. You should not meet him on a moral ground.
No, I know that he now fight against terrorists, against ISIS. But we not discuss, we are friends, and maybe tomorrow Nobel Peace Prize Committee will give to Bashar Assad Nobel Peace Prize.
Really? I don't think so.
Why
no,
not?
No.
400,000 terrorists from more than 100 countries came to Syria. Bashar killed them. That's why I think he's a man to whom Nobel Peace Prize Committee should give the Nobel Peace Prize.
Really?
This is my position.
Kirsan says he went to Syria to organise chess tournaments and for the same purpose, to shake hands with Saddam Hussein as the US attack on Iraq began and with Colonel Gaddafi during the NATO strikes on Libya. Operations which, of course, Russia condemned. So what were those visits really about?
But even the Kremlin said that they knew you were there and that you were conveying Russia's position.
When I visited Libya, I visited to meet with Gaddafi. I want to meet with...
And you put forward the official position of the Russian government?
No, it's not correct. We talked many hours with Gaddafi. I not represent position of one of country, Mongolia or Vietnam or United States or Russian Federation or France. Usually the friends like Bashar Assad and other presidents of countries, they ask my opinion as a man who visit many countries. And sometimes people start, Kirsan to meet Saddam Hussein. Kirsan met with Bashar. Kirsan met with Putin. Kirsan met with Clinton. Somebody. And if I feel that I can change the situation for the peace, I do it.
People are confused. People say, Kirsan mixes too many things together, chess and politics and then even business, so they say, for example.
Only I ask for chess. Why if I meet with Saddam Hussein, with Bashar Assad, with Gaddafi, with Jimmy Carter, with leader of China, I work for chess, I organize tournaments, I not organize wars, yes?
And finally, without Kirsan, in a restored 19th-century market building in Lower Manhattan, the tournament he helped organise is getting underway.
The anticipation is really mounting now because it's just a few moments until the ceremony of the first move, and I'm in the VIP lounge here, looking through glass windows at the playing area. Looks like a rather intimidating playing area to me. It's all very dimly lit. Quite small, with two large leather armchairs facing one another across the board, and lots of bottled water. Well, these matches can go on for 7 hours. And here comes Magnus Carlsen, coming slightly after Sergei Karjakin, settling himself down now in the deep leather armchair. They very briefly shaken hands, but after that they're certainly not exchanging any more glances.
Looks like they've started, and it's incredibly exciting. I'm curious to see what Magnus is playing as white.
Trompowski,
wow. Oh, that's what he's been playing lately. Oh, you see it right there, yeah.
Trompowski. It's an aggressive opening, White plays pawn to d4, black moves knight to f6, then white bishop to g5, just in case you're wondering, that some stupid journalists thought Carlsen chose in honour of America's next president. It's rattled Kariakin. His head is sinking ever deeper into his hands. The VIPs, who've paid up to $1,200 to get this close to the action, I got in free, are agog. And when they tire of the action on the board, there are more vodka cocktails on offer. But Kirsan is the ghost at the feast.
OK, please take your seats, everybody. So I would like to start the press
conference. And meanly, at the opening press conference, I'm going to rain on the organisers' parade.
Thank you. A question from the BBC to the organisers. How embarrassing is it for this event that the head of FIDE, Kirsan Ilyamzhinov, isn't able to be here because he isn't allowed into America at the moment?
Israel, maybe.
After a long pause, Kirsan's deputy, Israel Gelfer, is going to answer. He's looking absolute daggers at me.
Okay. We all know that there is some case between FIDE president, Mr. Kirsan Ilyamzhinov, and the United States authorities, but this is a press conference dedicated to the match and not to political questions.
After that, the organisers refused me an interview. Asking awkward questions at chess events doesn't go down well, as the English grandmaster Nigel Short has discovered over many years. He's an unrelenting opponent of Kirsan, who says potential non-Russian sponsors of chess are scared off by a president who consorts with aliens and dictators.
I think those lost opportunities in sponsorship, that's one thing which I will not forgive the current administration for. I think it is a great tragedy that chess has been brought down to this incredibly low level by a group of people of whom Kirsan is the head.
Sounds like you hate him.
I do hate him. Yes, you're right. You're right. One thing that people say about Kirsan is that he is nice. He gets away with a lot more because of his manner of doing things. There are many, many very serious questions which have never been properly answered.
Questions that Short tried to get answered at FIDE's General Assembly, the Parliament of Chessland, in Tromsø, Norway, in 2014.
There is an agreement, a memorandum, which appears to have been signed by Kirsan Ilyamzhinov himself, and it details a plan.
Short alleged that Kirsan would profit personally from a contract with FIDE's commercial arm, a claim Kirsan firmly denies.
I rejected. Never in my life since 1993, I never earned money from chess and from FIDE. Thank you. Okay.
And they basically just shut down further questioning on this subject, saying that time had run out.
You have allocated 15 minutes and you have wasted most of your time.
But Kirsan will always win, Short says, in a system where every national chess federation, however small, has just one vote, and Russian embassies solicit support for Kirsan.
When I started chess, Russia, by which I mean the Soviet Union, was the dominant chess superpower. But there has been the rise of two major chess superpowers, in particular India and China. And now, in fact, the United States won the last Olympiad. So, in a sense, the game has diversified in terms of the chess strength. But what we've seen is that the political power is now going back to Russia. And it has become steadily more obvious that Kyrgyzstan is backed by Putin. And I think he is an important instrument of Russian soft power. Their entire diplomatic service went into overdrive supporting Ilya Mzhinov's re-election.
Just before I came to New York, I got a fascinating insight into just how important Kyrgyzstan's role might be to Russia. It came from Ahmed Zakayev, a former Chechen rebel leader exiled to London. He told me how, back in 2008, Kyrgyzstan came to see him on a mission, he says, directly from Putin, offering him a possible job if he returned to Russia. So, the obvious question, did Putin also send Kyrgyzstan to meet Saddam, Gaddafi and Assad? Zakayev thinks that in those cases it was more subtle. Kyrgyzstan wasn't sent as a personal messenger, but he was sent as head of FIDE.
I think Putin tried to use Kyrgyzstan's status as the head of the World Chess Federation. Putin wanted to show that not only Russia, but even the president of a global organization can still shake Assad's hand. Putin needed that photo of the head of FIDE with Assad. The whole world had declared Assad a pariah, but the president of the World Chess Federation was meeting him, playing chess with him, chatting heart to heart with him, while Assad was committing war crimes.
Just because, are you specifically saying that Putin told Kyrgyzstan, as president of FIDE, to go and shake hands with those people?
Absolutely. He sent him to do it not as a Russian politician, but as head of FIDE. Kyrgyzstan did it, and he has suffered for that. Without an order from Putin, he wouldn't have gone.
It's a supposition, and Kyrgyzstan denies ever acting for Putin. But Zakayev's a wily old bird, well-versed in the ways of the Kremlin. And he's right that Kyrgyzstan's reputation has suffered from his association with the Syrian regime. He must have known it would. But now, suddenly, the positions on the global chessboard are changing to Kyrgyzstan's advantage. Advertising Kyrgyzstan rather as though he was a fairground attraction, a Russian-American friend of his, Ed Lozansky, is deliberately creating a mini-scandal after the official press conference in New York by calling another one with the embattled FIDE chief via smartphone from Moscow. Well, this is really a very weird scene because there's a whole bevy of journalists with their microphones outstretched to a smartphone with a tiny little face of Kyrgyzstan Ilya Mzhinov speaking on the smartphone in a rather tinny voice. Certainly, you might think not the most prestigious way for the head of the organisation to be addressing people. But Kyrgyzstan is triumphant. Why? Because of the sensational election victory of Donald Trump, an admirer of Putin. That was a question from Russian TV asking whether he thinks his chances of getting in here, of having the sanctions lifted, are greater now that Trump has been elected president. And he's saying, yes, I believe that from now on the United States will interfere much less in independent organisations in the affairs of other countries. No one knows, of course, whether Trump in office will be as pro-Russian as Trump on the campaign trail. But given his apparent eagerness to work with the Kremlin over Syria, it seems quite likely that sanctions against Russians over alleged Assad links may eventually be relaxed. Kyrgyzstan is cock-a-hoop because, as he told me back in Moscow, he's a kind of Trump himself.
Donald Trump more independent, like me, and me, businessman. And I'm like a Trump.
You are like Trump. You've got something in common with Donald Trump.
Yes, I announced that I am under sanctions. It helps me very much.
Really? Why?
Because many people, they criticize United States. Now my image in many, many countries, because of the case of the United States, no town.
It's better. Your image is better.
Right.
Because you've been sanctioned.
Because to everybody, I showed my balls. that I meant...
your cojones, you showed your balls, yes.
Yeah, I meant...
You're a real man.
I'm a real man. I'm not afraid. They're afraid of me.
Okay, the intensity is growing in game number 8 of the World Chess Championships 2016. And
meanwhile, back in the dark, soundproofed goldfish bowl, where East is battling West across those 64 squares, Kirsan's compatriot, the Russian underdog Sergei Karjakin, suddenly showed his balls this week, though that feels like a horribly un-chessy expression. After a succession of 7 brow-furrowing draws that have already become the stuff of chess legend, there was a sudden breakthrough in the 8th game of this best-of-12 tournament.
Karjakin just played h5. I have the feeling that after this move I can say that Sergei will win the game.
Yeah, really?
If you've ever wondered what the commentary at the climax of a chess game sounds like, is it a scream of, mate? The answer's no. It's this.
H4 is pretty desperate, to be honest. I mean, to play H4 was played? My God.
Yeah, but
and then this.
Let's face it, I mean, they are playing for so many hours already. To find A2, it's also you have to be very much alert for opportunities.
But, you know, yeah, A2 was played. A2 was played. But, you know,
no, but after this,
A2,
this move, we can say that the game is over.
Yeah, game is over. Game is over.
The no longer so cool Norwegian reached over for the curtest of handshakes with his opponent and stormed out. Victory to Russia? Well, that game's over, but the match certainly isn't, and there's no limit to the surprises chess can pull. This edition of Assignment was presented by me, Tim Hewell. The producer was Dina Newman, and the sound mix was by James Beard. Next week, Linda Presley is in Albania to investigate the country's green gold. She tells me it has a heady aroma.